language educator Caleb Gattegno once said, "Speaking is easy, communication is a miracle." This seemingly simple phrase holds a depth of truth that resonates deeply with our work here at Insight Myanmar Podcast. When we consider what it takes for genuine understanding to occur across cultures, experiences, and perspectives, it becomes clear that real communication is not just a matter of words. It's a dynamic and transformative interpersonal process. At its best, it has the potential to touch lives in profound ways. In the next couple of hours, we invite you to join us in exploring this process with the hope that today's dialogue brings us many moments of genuine connection and understanding.
Today, we are very fortunate. We are joined by Yaya, who is actually on the ground and is going to be able to reveal to us some of the realities that are being faced by both the resistance fighters and by the civilians in Myanmar. But before we get into all of that, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. I know it's very difficult to organize, to speak with you because of the technological difficulties. So we really appreciate you speaking with us. I want to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself for our audience, who you are and what it is that you're currently doing.
Yes, thank you. Hello, my name is Xiang Yaya, and you can call me Yaya. I was just one of a freelance revolutionary comedian in this, and I was joined the resistance of Myanmar in 2021. I'm also the one in the ground of Myanmar revolutionary thing. Thank you.
Excellent. So I want to sort of look at this. Obviously, we're not going to get into exactly where you come from and your background and your family and things like this for security. But you say that you joined the revolution very early on. I'm curious, what was the reason? Was there a specific moment when you decided, I'm going to join the revolution, I'm going to fight against the military? Was there a specific event or reason for this?
Thank you. That was just a simple question for me, because I think because of the injustice, because we have faced injustice since we have protesting. Firstly, honestly, that I was just one of the member to collect the election of the 2025 election. At this election, the party or NLD called National League for Democracy win, whatever. And I was one of the member to collect the election. So I know that which one is the winner and which one is the loser. And so, but whatever, the military had declined the result of the election. And he said that the NLD told that there was just like a lie or just like a fraud. But whatever, I was just like a member to collect this. So I know the truth. So I know that he was just doing the wrong thing. And then after them, he made the coup. Made a coup after that. We haven't accepted because I thought that there was just a fraud and it was just like a corruption. So I have joined the protesting. After protesting, they just shoot the civilian and the protester with a can, not like a rubber band. So, and then they also break the human rights in the protesting so much. So I can tolerate about this. And I'm trying the revolution, I think. Because of the industry thing, a lot of things happen in front of me and in the whole Burma at this time.
Yes.
So I haven't tolerated about this. So I'm trying this revolution, whatever.
And I wonder, what do you remember, like, what time it was, what month it would have been that you decided to join?
I think the strike, I think, because whatever it made the coup, and when the military start making the coup, and then I haven't accepted about this. Then after next 3 days, we got our country Myanmar. We got like if anything, or 72 hours.
Mm.
72 hours. This and that. During this 72 hours, you guys told me to protest and told me to say about anything. So be silent. And then I got that. Okay. So I don't know anything about this at this time. So then after the 3 days, I have started protesting.
Okay.
And then after the yeah. I think from the beginning.
Wow. I mean, that's really impressive. And so you would have seen quite a lot, and you would have seen quite a bit, because you're working as, I understand, you're working as a medic. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering, so what is the training that you received? Were you studying to become a medic or a doctor before the revolution, or did you receive all of your medical training after the revolution?
Oh, I received the medical training after the revolution. Before the revolution, I was just a young man trying to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. I'm a prospective teacher, and I go to the teaching academy school. We have to attend just like 5 years, and then I'm just a second year student at this time, and then the coup start. And then I have joined the resistance, you mean, joined the resistance, and I go to the jungle, and then just like, how do I say, I'm trying to teach the medic. Because you know that at this time, we have only a little more setter, the fighter and the medic, and the supporter. So I choose the medic. So for me, I joined, I got the medic training after the coup. Before the coup, I was just in the education training school.
And so I'm wondering then, how much training can you receive under these circumstances? Because I imagine you don't have a university that you can go to for medical training. Who is delivering the medical training, and how much training do you receive?
Yeah, at this time, my teacher who gave me the medical training was a main nurse. He also the one who don't like about the military coup, and he joined the resistance with me at this time. At first, he gave me the medical training. He is not a doctor. He's just like a main nurse, and he taught me about this man, about the medical training, and then we go about 2 months with him. We passed 2 months, and we go about and also the medical training and on ground with him 2 months. I think the training will last about 6 months.
Wow. Okay.
But not a doctor. Yeah.
Yeah. So quite an accelerated, quite a sort of speedy, speedy process there. So I'm wondering. Let's sort of get into what it is that you do, because you say that you are freelance, and that's a very interesting concept. A freelance sort of resistance fighter or resistance volunteer. How does this work? Do you have someone who will tell you where your skills are needed and where you should move? Or are there specific organizations and groups that you are in contact with who will ask you to come and spend time with them?
Oh yeah. Since I was a freelance, so there was every decision was as on me. So if I want to go, I go. If I want to have, I have. So this was like a freelance make, yeah? I also volunteer. So just for me, I go and I give support to all the group who have request to me to help them. To every group, I think so, who have joined the resistance, it's okay for me, because For me, I'm making the freelance is my purpose is just to make a decision or just to go whatever I go and whatever I want to go. So it was just like my purpose. And then I want to have all of the organization and all of the group who are trying the resistance. So I go to all the group. So sometimes they want to have me about the medical training. They just request me, yeah, can you give me my fighter, the first aid training? Can you give it? Yes, I say, yes, I go to them and I give the medical training, maybe 3 or 4 days or maybe 5 days sometime. But sometimes they just ask for the medical service. Yeah, we got sick in the front line. We got weak or we got a lethargy. So if they got something, I have to go to the drawing and help them. They were just like every organization tell me to help them, but not to join them. I will join with them. I will work under their organization, but I will help them as much as I can.
So you're providing a lot of different types of services to these groups, and I want to sort of look at them. The first is the medical training. So
yeah,
you're saying that you're providing very sort of short medical training, and I'm wondering what are you sort of training for? Are you predominantly training people to treat wounds and injuries? Are you training for first aid? Are you training for hygiene or to treat diseases like malaria, dengue? What is the focus on the medical training that you provide?
Oh yeah, thank you. I give the first aid training to the fighter. They were just like first for the combat thing. Not like a thing to do in the hospital, I think. I mean, just for the wound injury and the blood injury that you guys wake up in the war zone. But you know that because if a fighter or a soldier don't have a sense of knowledge of the first aid, whatever, if he got a shock on the front line, if you don't know about how to stop the bleeding and how to make your friend or your guy better, you will be dying because if you don't know how to stop the bleeding. Because in the war zone, maybe I think the case of the massive bleeding was the most problem for us.
Mm-hmm.
Massive bleeding was the problem for us because most fighters don't know how to control the bleeding. How to stop the bleeding. So, and then they got died. Sometimes they got a blast injury in their foot or in their hand, but it was not the fatal thing for them, you know. It's not severe, just like that, but they don't know how to apply the tourniquet and sometimes how to apply the chassis. So, they got whatever jab, unnecessary jab, you know. Whatever is this, isn't okay for us, a headshot fighter was dead, but, a fighter have been shot at the hand or at the leg, that is not okay for us. So I think maybe the training must be not like a teaching or something, just like sharing knowledge about how to control your bleeding, how to control the bleeding, and how to make first aid mostly combat in the front line. And if you can control the bleeding or your friends in the front line, he has the chance to survive. If he got with the medic. So that was the main purpose of my training.
Yeah.
So is it just short for me? Because I get the training maybe 2 or 3 days because, you know, the fighter, they so interested about how to treat a patient in the front line. They don't know about the drug and they don't know about the medicine and they don't know about the malaria and they don't even interested in about this. But I already told them that whatever you do, interest about the disease or about the thing that may in the hospital, but you have to know about the first aid in order to save yourself or your friend. So that was my purpose for the training.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And sort of on this, I'm wondering when you're being called in, not to do training, but you're being called in to actually provide medical care, what are the main issues? Because I imagine that if they're spending a lot of time outside in the jungle or in the forest, I imagine that there would be a lot of difficulty with disease and there would be a lot of difficulty with venomous snakes and things of this nature. So what are you seeing most often as patients? Are you seeing people who are suffering from illness and suffering from poison or suffering from fatigue, or are you seeing people who are suffering from battlefield sort of traumatic injuries?
Yeah. During this season, mostly we had the malaria and the dengue fever are mostly, but sometimes we have faced about the PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, because our guy or our fighter, sometimes they got shot and they got the trauma after the war because they have seen that their friend just died in front of them and they have been like a shoot because of the long, like something, or they got the trauma so much. So we have to take care about their mental health though, in the front line. And then the next one is in the front line, there was just like a lot of diseases. But sometimes, the kind and the wasp will have to drink the water, amphitheater water, got a lot of lime in this. So sometimes they got like a renal stove in their kidney. There was more common too. I think the malaria and the dengue fever and the renal stove are mostly we found in the front line. But sometimes there were also a fatigue because they have to check the enemy just for the whole time and just for the whole day, whatever. They just facing the enemy in the front line. So they haven't sleep for the whole night. At the time, they have the fatigue and we have to give the supply. And where to give the medical support at this time. But fatigue is also most common too.
This is something that sort of comes up quite a bit as well. You mentioned the mental health. And when we're talking about disease and we're talking about battlefield injuries, that makes sense. And that's quite logical. We understand that. But the mental health component, and as you say, exactly, it's having to be constantly awake, constantly alert, constantly prepared for the possibility of being attacked, it puts a very big mental and emotional strain on an individual. So I'm wondering, what is it that you're able to do there? When it's, dengue or malaria, we understand that we can give medication. If it's an injury, as you say, we can put the tourniquet and we can do these things. But what can you do for someone who is suffering from mental strain and emotional strain as a result of being in the field too long?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I was a guy with a lot of sense of humor. I can speak a lot of joke. That was just like my good thing, I think. So when I got to that, sometimes they got suffering from a lot of mental health and maybe had issue about mental. And then I just talk with them and I have just counseling them. Before, I think maybe 2022, I have attended a counseling course. I think, yes, I have attended a counseling course and then I got something from them. And then I made my friend, the fighter or the front line who got the mental health illness with my counseling, but not like a professional because I'm not professional at the counseling, but I do as much as I can. And as much as I just make them to relax their mind and to relax their trauma or whatever. Sometimes I give them food that they had never eaten for so long. A hamburger just like something. The burger is just like a hardest thing for the frontline hero to get them. So sometimes I made a hamburger or just like a palmy pasta, how do I call this? Nandito? Yes, and I make the food and I send to them whatever and in order to make them to relax or their mind, to relax their mind and to get a little more better from the mental health. I think I wish I can do this at some time. I just make a counseling with them. I just talk a lot with them. I'm just motivated about them, but not like a professional.
And so when you're talking about, making all this food and distributing it to try to give them some comforts on the front line, is this something that you're doing through Owl Company that you established?
Yeah, I think I set the full depth feeding my guy with own company. Yeah, I think I make a setter about my own company. We make it on feed. You know the feed is we just use the feed for the animal, but because of my company name was an own, so I don't use the name or own tree. Like I just use own feed because it was just like a name, like but own feed was the name, but I treat my guy with something they just want to eat the most. Sometimes I go to the front line and I just ask them, hey guy, I got a bad jack, I'm gonna treat you something or snack or like something. What do you want to eat? They just mention me like a burger or with a Coca-Cola. They say, okay, I will make it for you guys. And then I go back to the back line and I just prepare for them and I send it to them. Just like, as simple like this. Just that the title was with own company, but I made it alone, whatever.
Mm. And I think it's very powerful because we see this in armies all throughout the world. And I mean, we've seen this since World War I at least, and probably older than that, sending specialty foods from home to the soldiers, making sure that the soldiers have access to, you know, like whether it's chocolates or whether it's Coca-Cola or whether it's just, you know, as you say, like hamburgers and pizza and things like this. It's incredibly, incredibly important to achieve.
Let me know the audience there about own company. Our company was a company was founded by me. Because since I joined, I have decided to make this revolution with freelance. So I have to use the name, I think. So I choose to make a company like an own company. It was just not like a real company in the real life. It was just like a page and an organization, just like something referred to me. But that organization, there was only me in this organization. And there was a private and a freelance company for me to make the fundraising thing for me with this. So after the resistance, we have joined the resistance for so long, and the revolutionary time was come so long in just like 4 years. I have worked so much, and then is this not okay for me? And it's not enough for me to make the fundraising in my personal account on Facebook. So I have decided to make a page, and then the own company have been coming just like this. I have decided to make an own company. So in our company, what we do is I give support and supply to my fighter, mostly in the front line. We have a lot of setup in our company, but mostly we keep supplying the tactical helmet and the tactical backpack to the frontline guys, because in the frontline, they just facing that most organization or the revolution don't support mostly all the helmet and the backpack. They just focus on other like and just like food, just like this. So they don't focus about the hammock and the backpack. So I got to the front line and I saw that, oh my God, that was just an important thing for the soldier. So before the without the hammock, he don't have a place to sleep. And without a backpack, he don't have something to pack his thing and to go somewhere. So I think that was just an important thing. And I try to support them about the backpack and the hammock. And then I got a flow, and then I got so much flow. And from till from now, I have already supported maybe 1,000 hammock and over 1,000 hammock and over 1,000 backpack to the front line. And so there was a data for me, a data I make with own company like this. So my own company gives the supply, mostly hammock and the backpack. But sometimes, I don't like the normal way for me, because sometimes I make whatever something special, or sometimes I make another setter or on-feed. On-feed mean like I'm just treating my frontline guy with something or something special we haven't eaten for a long time. So a lot of setter for in the on-feed, and another one is just like on-medic. But I haven't I haven't announced about Almedic Frontier now, but I have a plan to announce about the Almedic, because sometimes I have to go to the front line and I have to queue up about the fatigue guy in the front line. Mm. So I have to give the injection or something, or give supply with the medic. I have to buy medicine, but I don't get excited about the medicine from our company. So it was just like a difficulty for me because of the I need a little spend about the medicine. So I decided to make our medicine for me. I think that I have announced this officially from my own company page. Mm-hmm. So just for me, from our company, there was just the main thing we do is we just offering the resistance group, all of the resistance group with tactical helmet and tactical backpack. But sometimes we just offering food, and sometimes we just offering medical service to the front line. That was just what our company do. But I think for the later from the own company, I think I will make something. I think I will let you know first that I have announced it from the own company. But at the end of this month, I have a plan to make a product or own company. I'm gonna sell them. Yeah, I'm gonna sell them and to make fundraising for me. Yes, it was just like a secret. I have announced this. I have announced it to say the April.
Okay.
To say April, yeah, handmade by the resistance crew. So there were just a plans for me, but I haven't implemented. Yes, there was just like all about my own company.
You're talking about things like hammocks, and obviously besides the comfort of sleeping in a hammock instead of sleeping on the floor, of course, like this can help you to not be bitten by insects. This can help to keep you dry. Like the significance of having clean clothes, dry clothes, a place to sleep, a place to store your things has big medical impacts. It would seriously be improving the health of the unit, the health of the individual soldiers. So I think what you're doing is very important, because it strikes at the very heart of it. And I want to get into this, because you would have seen this. You would have seen the resistance groups. You would have seen the EAOs and the PDFs. And I'm wondering, what can you tell us about their living conditions? What can you tell us about things like sanitation? Do they have, you know, a place to bathe? Do they have the ability to keep their clothes clean? Do they have the ability to get clean water to drink? Do they have the ability to get clean food to eat? Can they protect themselves from mosquitoes? Are there any of these environmental issues that that resistance units are trying to deal with?
I think there are a lot of issues and a lot of difficulty that the resistance have been trying. But it's just like you asked, how to keep your clothes clean and how to prevent yourself from being bitten by the mosquito is just okay for the resistant crew and the resistant guy in the back line. But in the front line, it's not okay for them, because they don't got a full supply at the front line. Sometimes the resistant crew and the organization crew, their front line guy, don't even get about the helmet. So if it's little gap about the hammer, how do they sleep? They just sleep in the floor.
Yeah.
But sometimes there's no floor bread, because they are just go to the front line where in like a jungle. So there are a lot of mites and mosquitoes. So without the hammer, they can be beaten by the mosquito and mite, and then they can lose their hygiene. And they got the kind of scabies or like a kind of, you know, the itching in the body.
Yeah.
Like this. So they got a lot of health problem with this. So I think for the resistance in the front line, it was not okay for them to keep their clothes clean all the time, because sometimes they have to act like the second stem, whatever. It's sometimes they have to go to the front line and there's no water. Or just like a place to get difficulty about the water. Please know about less water. You know, sometimes they have to go in the mountain at the top of the hill. So they were just like a problem with the water. They don't get enough water to wash their clothes cleanly. So in the front line, I think they can keep their stuff warm and clean all the time. But in the back line, I think it's maybe a little better instead of the front line. Yeah.
Okay. This is good to understand. And to the best of my knowledge, you've also been to internally displaced people camps, IDP camps. Here we're talking about civilians now, not fighters. And again, I have much the same question for you. I want to know, what can you tell us about the conditions of people in IDP camps? Do they have, you know, clean water, clean food? Can they stay dry? Can they stay clean? Do they have good sanitation? But also what I want to know about is, you as a medic, what sort of medical problems would you be seeing a lot of in IDP camps? Are the civilians being wounded by conflict, or is it mostly mental trauma and disease?
Yeah, I think in IDP camp, we got mostly about the PTSD disorder, right? Mm-hmm. Because the IDP gang are just not like the fighter. They haven't know about the weapon, or they haven't know about the airstrike. They just like a civilian, so they don't have their experience about this. So after the first time, or they have faced about the airstrike or like something about war, so they got a lot of, you know, a mental health issue, and then they just have to move from the place and have to just play from somewhere. So that's like an IDP. So if they have in IDP, we got an issue about all, I think maybe the lack of food, not enough food, just like in the IDP. If as people or someone, they have to go to just like whatever in the IDP, and they have to move from their place, first they have to face about the food, I think, because they don't have the enough food in the place they ran of the wazo. They ran out of the wazo, just like the IDP, so the food problem, and then sometimes the medical care problem. At this time, they ran in from the wazo, so they got an injury, and sometimes they like the mental health issue, so they just also need about the health condition too. So I think for the IDP, they are mostly issue like maybe the food, and they're just like the health medical service. Sometimes they don't even get about the medical service. Don't think about the psychological service, just like how to treat the mental health. They don't even get a physically medical service sometimes. So just for them, psychologically treatment and just like counseling is hard to reach to them, because they have to run a place where they don't know, and a place where they don't stay for them. And so there are a lot of issues and problems for them. The food, water, sometimes they also have to drink the water, just like in the medi pool. So they have to drink water, whatever, because they're thirsty, so there's no water. If they are go somewhere or a place where they don't know too much, they can face with the military. And if they face with the military, they also know that they will have been faced more wars than have to drink with the medi pool water. So they have to drink it, whatever. So they have to eat it, whatever, just like a little pity for them. So I sometimes go to them and I have give them supply with food and just like something. For me, mostly I get supplying to kids. There was a migrant school that was teaching about the IDP children. That school have been in touch with me from Tainan. There was maybe, I think, should be over 100 students in that school, mostly, and not mostly all of the students are IDP children, and they all are over 80, and then sometimes they they're just teaching, they're just taking the education from the school, but they don't have enough food for them. Sometimes they have to eat with just like hundreds of banana steam food, whatever they got to get easily. Yeah. So I give supplying to them about food. Sometimes chicken curry or maybe a pork curry. Sometimes I give, I send to them to eat for the baby. So mm-hmm. that was the food problem. I forgot about it. Last year in the rainy season, I sent them about the filter, about water. Because in that IDP school, there was a water problem. Cause kids drink the water and they got maybe just like a diarrhea. So they have to, they have to boil the water. So yeah. They had to boil the water for the whole time. So, and then there was a madam who had the kid to boil the water. But I think she got an accident in boiling the water. And then he got a band over his whole body. Just like while boiling the water. So I decided to offer them a filter, a water filter. So maybe last year I just offered them a water filter. And now they don't need to boil the water anymore at this camp. But there are a lot of problems and a lot of difficulty and a lot of needs in other IDP camps too. So there was the camp that I had go seen before this, and there was the situation and the condition that I can tell about you.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, because you spoke about the water, I know that we have, for example, water purification tablets or water purification drops that we can put in water to help clean it. I've seen a lot of small portable filtration bags that you can fill with water, and it will clean the water for you. These types of devices and these types of medications, I mean, they can save lives. Are these available in Myanmar, or is it not possible for these communities to get access to this stuff?
Yes, right. It's available in our place, and I haven't seen the water purification tablet before. But just know that for the IDP, for the water purification tablet are okay for the short-term use, because the water purification, if we apply the water purification tablet, the smell is just like a full smell for us. And then I think the purification tablet got a chlorine, you know. So the IDP don't know how to apply this where, and most IDP can reach English, so they don't know how to apply this, how many liter to a tablet, so they don't know about this. So if we get tell them about specifically a tablet should be used with 1 liter or just like something. Yeah. If we don't tell them, if we don't get the information, they don't know how to use it. So sometimes a tablet would fit to a 1,000 liter tablet is they just use in maybe a 10 liter or something. So you know that? Yeah. So they got a heart issue problem from them, because there are so much of chlorine.
Yeah.
There was just not like it. So we have to give them so much. But it's okay for the short term. I'm telling you that because mostly they just want the water. And the water purification tablet is hard to buy from our region. It also costs a little, maybe just like expensive for them. So they never buy about this. They just find the water mostly. That's right. Bro.
That makes sense. And it's good that there's something that they can do, but it's still very upsetting to see how limited and how restricted it is. And so turning back to the mental health dimension of it as well, this is something that we have seen be a consistent problem in Myanmar. Since the coup, also before the coup, where there are obviously people who are faced with horrible trauma, And there doesn't seem to be any mental health support. There almost doesn't seem to be a recognition of how important mental health is. And obviously, looking long term, we would be looking at the possibility of Myanmar 5 years, 10 years from today, with an entire generation who are dealing with trauma, who are dealing with pain, who are dealing with fear that they have not been able to process, that they have not been able to seek therapy for, and that is going to make it very difficult to rebuild the country. So what I would like to ask is, what is generally the response to mental health problems? Are there organizations, are there individuals, counselors, psychologists, or anyone who are able to try to provide help, to provide counseling to the victims of this conflict?
I have met a person who make the counseling just like a professional in this conflict. I haven't seen this, I think, but sometimes I know that there was a plan we got in the Free Burma region. There was a GIC plan, I think. Yeah, in the Free Burma region, they got a GIC plan, and that plan was to make the civilian and mostly IDP had issue, mostly mental health issue. Sometimes they go to the IDP and they dance with the children and they sing with the children. And sometimes they offer them a job, just like to pay. Yes, I think there was must be the Free Burma Region organization, who made the CINC plan. I think I have faith and the Free Burma Region sometimes request me to join the CINC plan, but because of most against them, I haven't joined it. Because I am not a believer, maybe.
Yes.
So, but I think in next time, I wish I could join with his plan.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. But so that definitely tells us that there is an enormous lack. There is an enormous need for mental health support, mental health services, in Myanmar for civilians and for resistance fighters at the moment.
Yes, the mental health problem. You know that the mental health support is just very important for the civilian and the IDP, but it was just like less. An organization they are just trying to make they are just trying to fight against the military coup. They just they don't focus upon the IDP. That's only Free Burma Region organization, I think. He has only focused on the IDP. But this is not their fault, because maybe they don't have a budget, or they don't have supporting to face or to deal with the IDP. But I think the government, National Unity Government of Myanmar, you know, the NUG have issued taken action about the IDP or the civilian mental health issue. I think he should make a plan about it, because he was just a government. But just for us and for the client and for the fighter in the front line, they don't make and they can focus on just like counseling or just like being. I think the NUG should take in account and should just like take an effort more about IDP, I think.
Yes. Yeah. And so are you saying that there is this localized to one area, or does this seem to be the case across the country, that all of the effort, all of the focus, all of the resources are being given to EAOs and PDF, and the IDPs are not being given any real support?
No, not like that. They got a support, but this is not, I think, enough for them. Just like, you know, not enough support. Yeah, sometimes they got support from us and sometimes from other organizations, but not just like enough. It's just not enough for them. But sometimes not enough, just like a medical service. Because mostly don't Though I think, what do I say? They just focusing how to fight the war.
Yeah.
There was no man focus on the soft power, I think.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. And so at this point, if you're comfortable with it, I'd like to sort of pivot the conversation a little bit more to your personal experiences, your personal life, because besides the work that you're doing as a medic, besides the support that you're lending to the resistance, I understand you identify as a member of the LGBTQ community. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. And the reason that that's something I wanted to discuss, I actually personally had a friend of mine who was also a member of the LGBT community, and he mm-hmm. went and he joined one of the resistance organizations in after the coup in Karen mm-hmm. State, and he found that there was still discrimination happening, because Myanmar, as we know, is a rather conservative nation. And I'm wondering whether during this coup period, speaking as someone who's from within the community, have you experienced a changing of the attitudes towards the LGBT community? Have you experienced more of an acceptance, or do you find that the discrimination and the suspicions are just taking a different shape?
Yes, I think that discrimination is not stopped during the crisis and during the revolution break, I think. Because
really?
Before the coup, I have faced a lot of discrimination about being an LGBTQ. And then I joined the revolution and the resistance. I also faced about this too. But when I got to the jungle and when I reached to the resistance organization, there are a lot of discrimination because of being an LGBTQ. But you know that sometimes our LGBTQ guys can hold or had a less effort about in a physical strength. So they just like, hey, why can't you carry a bag like this, a sachet of rice or a sachet of food? Why? Because you are a guy, you are a man, or you are a boy. So why can you carry about this? Just a lot of discrimination upon the physical strength and about just like sometimes we act like whatever we want to live, like a lot of trans girls I have ever seen in my life during this revolution. So sometimes in this, the organization forced the trans guy to change their lifestyle, maybe just like cut their long hair, or just as like a soldier, just like something, a lot of discrimination I have faced. That's for me. Yes, but for me, I think I faced the discrimination in the, I think in the military training for me. I haven't told you that, when I first joined the resistance, I just come to the resistance, just to teach and just to, got a training about the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got back to the resistance, I made the wrong place. I got the wrong place because I have got to the resistance group of just like a kind of, how do I say it? a fighter camp.
Oh wow.
So yeah. So how do I say it? So for me, I have go to join the medic camp, and then first I have roundly join the fighter camp. So wow. I have to train just like them. I think maybe a man. During a man, I said, really? So I got the wrong place. I got not like a training or giving a medic or training a medic or about a medicine. They just like, no, there was just a training about the weapon and the aim and how to face the military in the front line. I was just shocked at this time because since I was an LGBTQ and I don't like to just like to shoot again or it's not okay for me to learn about the end and about the gun, just like, so I was just shocked, and I just asked them, "Oh, so can you send me to the training or the medic who gets training?" They just were just like, you know, because of the security, they can send me. So whatever, I have to attend that training for a month. At this time, I have to run and I have to learn about how to shoot the enemy and how to act and how to live in the front line as a fighter at this time. So the training was as a fighter, but since I was just a LGBTQ, I can make the training like a normal guy or just like a straight guy, because a straight guy, they have a lot of physical strength and they have a lot of knowledge about the game, but it's just not like me, because I'm the LGBTQ, so I can make like them, just like they do. So they just make a discrimination on me. Why can you do about like this? If a man could run, maybe 10 rounds, I can run 10 rounds. I can run maybe 5 rounds or the 7 rounds. So they just make like a discrimination on me. Why can you do about just like us? You are also the boy and I'm a guy. So why? There's a lot of discrimination for me. But at this time, you know, that since I was a man who cannot about this, I was a LGBT and I don't afraid about the discrimination. So I have to tell them better. Why not? Just for me, during this, there was just not my real purpose of joining the resistance. I have to tell back to them. But most people, they just understanding about the LGBTQ, but sometimes we have faced about the discrimination until now, they sometimes, maybe in the organization, there was a guy who at the top of the organization, sometimes they just make a discrimination about the LGBT. So whatever, I have to prove that an LGBTQ community guy also can do work and can make very well and in every second and every situation about their interest. So I prove myself that I joined the medic after this and that I made very well in the medic training. I think I got the first the rule one, I think. Yeah, I'm how do I say the best? I'm the best at the medic training. Best for me in the fighter training, I went the rules one. Yeah. So I have proved them better. I'm going to show you like this. In the medic training, I was the best guy. In my medic training, I became the medical team leader at this time. So I proved them better. And then from today now, we need to prove that an LGBT community guy, LGBT community is also a human and they can also walk very well until now.
Yeah.
We have to prove that now. Yeah.
And I have great respect for what you achieved there, but I'm quite surprised to hear this, because, you know, those of us who remember from back in 2021, it felt like there was a lot of social progress being made very quickly. We saw, you know, a lot of the LGBT community joining the protest movement very visibly, very proudly. We obviously saw the Tamein Kantat, you know, incidents in Yangon, Mandalay, where the Gen Z boys were wearing Tamein as a sort of act of social protest to say that, you know, we are not afraid of women's clothes. We are not afraid of losing our pawn and any of these ancient beliefs that the military has. So it felt like women and the LGBT community were being respected more because particularly Gen Z were saying, we are not interested in the old way of thinking. We need yes. to think forward. We need to progress. We need to become more modern. And of course, we saw a lot of women, and we still see a lot of women joining PDFs and EAOs and doing the military training and fighting against the military. Yes, the women also face discrimination in the training, though, as we hear. So I'm upset to hear what you're saying, because I genuinely believed that they would have been much more welcoming. And much more happy to have, you know, LGBTQ people fighting alongside them, and so you're saying it's the actual other volunteers, the other people doing the training, who were discriminating against you. And it feels very, very strange to me. Do you have an idea of why they would be doing that? Are they lashing out because they are tired and exhausted and scared and overloaded mentally, or are they just continuing the same type of discrimination and the same type of old thinking that they had, 5 years ago, 10 years ago?
So that's like because their education level is so low, and they don't know about the human rights, and they don't know about the human rights. So Myanmar is just like a developing country. It's not a developed country.
Yeah.
So citizens are some citizens are just like they are. Act like a modern people, and they have a thought. They thought and they act like a modern people, but in some people, they don't know about this and they don't accept about this. So I think because of the education, the education was ruled by the military, whatever. I think because in our education board, there was EOS discrimination about the military. The military said that, but just for me, since I was young, and I have read in my notebook that, saying that a KNU was just like a terrorist for our country, like a bad kind, or they just return just like this. So we have been brainwashed for them in the education, and the education level was so low for Myanmar, comparing with other countries or with a modern country. So I think there were, is this probably for the people who discriminate us, because in this country, because they don't have a modern thought and they don't think like a modern people, just like, because the education level is so low.
And I'm wondering that now that you've done it, you're talking about the discrimination you faced as you were doing the training. But now you've finished your training, and now you deliver medical training and you provide medical services that keep people alive. I'm wondering, do you continue to face discrimination even in this current role that you have as a medic?
Yes, why not? Sometimes.
Really?
Not in the training. I'm delivering the training. During the training, there was a discrimination because if I go to somewhere or if I'm giving to medical supply to an IDP or to the civilian, they just look at me like that. Oh, there was a gay teacher or there was a gay guy. He want to give the medical service to us. They just don't believe me at first. So I have to prove them that I was just not like it. And I can do this. I have to prove them that. Just like whatever. Sometimes they just made me like a verbal abuse, like something just like, oh, look at this. There was like a gig or something. But sometimes I have faced about this from China. But just for me, there was just a normal thing for me because I have been faced the discrimination for my whole life. So I haven't felt this seriously. Oh, they just discriminating on me. Just like they got a low brain level or they don't know about the LGBT knowledge like this. I have considered this. But sometimes if I'm okay and if they are easily to understand it, I have explained about the LGBT community to them. But sometimes, they are just like a homophobia or just like they just don't even want to listen to me about explaining to them about the LGBT community. So I just letting them go. It's okay for me. So I just let them go and I just work my job straightforward. Just like this. Yeah.
Fair. I mean I respect the position and the professionalism that you bring. But it's just very surprising to me because I had imagined that I'm assuming that these are Gen Z people that you're training.
Gen Z, mostly Gen Z, and I think maybe
mostly Gen Z.
Yeah, mostly Gen Z because I train the new troop. Just for me, I have to train the fighter guys because I'm the medic. I'm the medic and I train the fighter guy about the first aid medic. So there are a lot of Gen Z Chinese and Gen Z guys. They want to join the resistance. So if they want to join the resistance, whatever, they have to go about a fighter training. So in the fighter training, there was just like a small set of first aid training. So I have to give them just like this. So mostly Gen Z.
Wow. Because I had thought that they would associate homophobia and sexism and racism and all these things, that they would associate this with the military. And they would say, well, that's what the military does. And that's what the military teaches. And that's what the military believes in. And we will be different than them. Would you say that there has not been much social progress in Myanmar among the Gen Z since the coup?
After the coup, they got move all the social progress. Before the coup, there was so difficult for them to see more about the LGBT community or just like something, because you know that they don't even know about that the military was bad for them before the coup. So after the coup, that they have seen that the military was breaking the human rights, and they just like acting like a terrorist. So they just got a social progress, and they got like a knowledge about the real knowledge, not like a brainwash knowledge. So I think they got a little improvement after the military coup. And whatever, if I say that I got a discrimination in the resistance after I joined the resistance, later, and the discrimination is more or less the lesser. I have passed them. Just not like the old man, just like discrimination, just like the old time. But it is more lesser than yesterday, I think, because this was the kind of improving the social progression. I think so. A little progression is, I thought it. Yeah.
Okay. So there is some improvement, at least.
Yeah. The improvement, okay. At least. Because, Brad, we are just joining and we're just doing about the revolution because of the improvement, right? So if there's no improvement in the revolution, it means that our revolution must be fake or just like something. It's just like it's not working because we're just fighting for the improvement and for the just like this. So
absolutely.
Whatever. So there must be a movement and there was just like a progression and like an improvement, whatever. Because this is our revolution. Yeah.
Absolutely. And on that sort of broader topic, sort of turning back to the conflict itself and the revolution itself, you've been doing this for years and years and years now, and we've seen times when the resistance is doing very well and gaining a lot of territory, and we've seen times when the military is gaining territory. And I wonder, from your perspective, being on the ground, seeing the conflict, what do you think is likely to happen in the coming months or the coming years? Do you think that the military and the resistance are sort of balanced, or do you think that the resistance is slowly pushing the military back?
Oh, I think that the resistance is pushing by the military back. Whatever, some people they will see like that. There was a problem for us. They will see just like. There was an equal for the military and the resistance. But just for me, I have been passing in the resistance year after year. I have been seeing that at the resistance, when we joined the resistance first, we don't have no arm and no weapon at this time. We have to fight them back with the hammer gun, just like a hammer gun, just like something. But at this time, we don't need to make a hammer gun. We can buy the real gang, and we also have our old territories about the resistance gang. I think there was just like a progression for us, just like also the improvement for the revolution. But sometimes, you know, the people who join the resistance are also brainwashed for a long year by the military. So there are a lot of people in this, in our system. The just like a kind or they don't think like a young guy, or just like a lot of people doing fraud or corruption during this revolution because of the just like brainwashed by the military coup. There are a lot of people who joined the revolution and they don't work very well. So we have to face about this because the resistance crew are progressing better than yesterday, but we have to be unit very well, right? We have to be unit very well and we have to fight them back. So I think that this time there was just like a progression and a lot of improvement in our resistance, but we kind of need to just like, we have to unit, like a unite. We have to unite very well. And then we have to fight with the military, with the union, all of the country, all of the EROS and all of the PDF. We have to unite very well and we have to make a deal very well about the war or just like something very well. And we have to fight back to the military. So I think that we are just taking time to get that step to about the unity. I think so.
Yeah.
So how do I say? Like, I see a lot of improvement during this revolution. But I think, our resistance crew are, better than the military coup, since FS. In 2022, the resistance is better than in 2021. In 2025, the resistance crew are doing better than in 2022, just like this. We got a lot of progression. But the military, they don't get the progression. So they have to make, how do I say, they have to grab the people in the city, grab the young man or the young guy and the Gen Z in the city. They have to grab them and put them in the military because they don't have no more power, I think, no more strength. I think they are lesser in strength and we got better. I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a very optimistic sort of message, and I think something that we often miss looking at it from the outside, looking at it from the top down, when we're looking at land moving backwards and forwards and we're looking at, you know, casualty numbers. So it's very valuable for us to hear your perspective and what you're saying about the improvements in supply and the improvements in technology and the improvements of capability on the ground, which is harder for us to see on the outside. So I really appreciate that you're able to give us that insight. So I think we've covered a reasonable amount of ground. I'm conscious of time. I know you're talking to us by Starlink, which is very expensive. And I really appreciate you telling us about not only your experience as a medic, but also the LGBTQ experience within the context of the revolution.
Okay, to all the Myanmar people, I just want to tell them, I just want to motivate them that we have been so far, we have came so far. So whatever we have to go through during this. But sometimes we have faced some barrier or some kind of just like a conflict in our resistance kind. We have to resolve it and we have to clearly clarifying about this result, about the problem, whatever. So how do I say, don't disappoint on the resistance and the revolution. Just keep fighting and just keep fighting and just move forward. One day, if we, the people in all of the resistance unite very well and fight by the military coup, in one day, there was just our inevitable West Wing as one day, whatever. So, and to all the international guys, if you are reaching there, our Myanmar was still fighting against the military coup and we are just fighting for the democracy. So, if you kind want to support Myanmar, just support directly toward the resistance. Don't support the military coup. Because the military coup is breaking the human rights and he just make a model every day. So just focus, just help directly toward our resistance group, because we're just fighting for the democracy. So whatever, if you want to help us, make sure that you are really happiness. Because sometimes you know that, oh, they were just like, they see that Myanmar people have been faced the war and a lot of NDP have been displaced. So they just help and they just make and they just send the supply from the military. So it was nothing makes sense and they don't shoot the supply. How do I say? In the there was an earthquake. There was an earthquake in Myanmar recently. There was strike in Myanmar. So at this time, a lot of civilians were being trapped and other damaged buildings. But mostly the international guy want to help them, but they just contact directly toward the military. So it wasn't okay for, it wasn't really their supply don't really get to the guy who really need their supply. So make sure that if you want to help Myanmar in fighting against the democracy, make sure that you are really happy now. Just like this, all.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Insight Myanmar Podcast. As with many of our conversations, the one you just heard shines a light on a pressing issue regarding the challenges and complexities now being faced by Myanmar and its people. These stories are powerful and necessary to raise our awareness. But the real value of having our awareness raised comes when it can be translated into some type of positive action. And this is where our pitch comes in. One such action could be supporting us in producing more episodes like this one so that we can continue to air diverse stories and perspectives about what's really happening in Myanmar. This will help raise the awareness and reaching even more listeners who themselves might be propelled to take some type of positive action. As you might imagine, we do have production costs, and it's mainly the generous support of our listeners that enables us to continue this important work in amplifying voices that need to be heard. And so by contributing, you're not just supporting a podcast, you're helping to create space for solutions to emerge, for stories to inspire change, and for awareness to develop into meaningful action. If you believe in the importance of these conversations and want to help us in keeping them going, visit insightmyanmar.org/donation. Together, we can make sure that these critical conversations continue to inspire action and change.
Yarananda, 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 Yarananda,